Hello and welcome to another episode of the Sexo Market Call podcast. As always, I'm your host. My name is Soren Otto, and today it is Macro Day, so I am joined by Yu Charu Chanana from Singapore. Hi, Charu, how are you doing?
Hi, Soren. Thank you for having me back. I'm very good. Thank you.
That's great. It's good to have you back. Also, seen in the light that we've had a few weeks where earnings seasons have been probably the prevailing thing in markets that has been defining whether we're going up or going down, but it seems like this week is more or less at least going back to life, back to reality, I was about to say, but at least it's going back to macro figures because we have a very important CPI number coming up, and we'll discuss that a little bit later, also in connection with some other US data, especially the jobless claims. And then after that, we're going to talk a little bit about the China performance, which has been rather interesting. For a while now, and then we're going to touch upon the FX world and what is happening there. But maybe we just start really in the US because, I mean, we've seen some weaker jobless claims figures, as I said. But yeah. How do you see that? Do you think that's sort of a sign of anything turning for the worse for once? I mean, now we've been waiting for this slowing of the US economy for quite some time now.
No, that's totally right. Sorry, I mean, it's been a big driver for the markets last week. But, you know, these jobless claims numbers, they are weekly, and there can be some amount of, you know, disruptions in the collection of that data. So I don't know how much really we can draw from that print. But certainly, if you look at the backdrop of things, there has actually been a lot of focus on the jobs market in the last 2 weeks after that non-farm payrolls report that we got for April, where we did see a slowdown to, headline jobs growth just to 175,000 in April. It was a sub 200K kind of number for the first time in 5 months. So I think that was really the start of some tremors, given how closely NFP data is usually watched. We also had, other things like JOLTS job openings in March declining to the lowest level in more than 3 years. The quits rate, I think that's particularly important within that JOLTS report. We get that, and that slipped a little bit as well. So what does that really reflect is that not as many people are really throwing their resignation letters to their bosses now, which is again a reflection that the job market is softening. You know, people do not have the same kind of conviction that they will be able to find another job outside very quickly. And so they're not kind of voluntarily, resigning. So that's the quits rate. I think that's an important figure that gives us quite a bit of idea as to what's happening in the jobs market. So in the backdrop of these numbers, certainly those weekly jobless claims data has been extremely relevant. It has also been extremely relevant if you see how steady that number has been. So since the start of February, that number has been around 210K week after week, very, very steady. And now we saw a jump to 231K or something last week. So certainly a signal that we could see some softening here. But again, I would say a little bit probably too soon to draw conclusions. But what this really means is that, like you mentioned, certainly this week, the focus is on CPI. But I think I will also keep a very close eye on that jobless claims number once again. And if we see that 230 kind of print or higher continuing, and that, I think, to me, will be some reasons to believe that the U.S. labor market has finally started to show that impact coming through from those high interest rates now.
Yeah, and related to that, I mean, at the end of the day, much of this has to do with interest rates or rate cuts from the Federal Reserve. And obviously, one of the figures that they pay a lot of attention to is inflation. And officially, they aren't really looking at the CPI. They're looking at what's called the PCE inflation, which comes a little bit later. But in reality, that's at least usually what you tell me, is that the two numbers are so closely connected that if you have a CPI that's probably surprising this time around, then probably Fed will also look at PCE later on with a closer eye. Mm. So what's your expectation of this CPI figure? Because I also guess that there isn't really a one-to-one connection with the job market performance and these inflation figures. I guess there's sort of a lag between the two.
No, totally. And yeah, let me rephrase these two things, right? First, how big a CPI is a driver of PCE? I mean, certainly I can't put a number to that, but significantly. And the second component that goes into that PCE calibration is the PPI number. So certainly Fed has that flexibility that they can say that, you know, if we do get a sticky CPI number, but like last month, PPI was not as sticky as the CPI, which meant that the PCE expectations were a little bit more, subdued. So that obviously gives the Fed that flexibility to stick to its dovish narrative. Well, that can be the case again. And if CPI is softer, then everybody has a reason to celebrate, whether it is the Fed or the markets. So certainly CPI is a big driver, I mean to say, of PCE, but PPI also plays a part there. So as you said, yes, Fed actually looks at, you know, technically at PCE. And the second thing in is about, you know, how the jobs data kind of fuels the CPI number. So the problem that we've had with CPI lately, you know, all of Q1, we've obviously had these sticky inflation prints that have become a little bit of a pain point. But a lot of that is being driven by rental inflation. Now, if that jobs market really starts to cool from here, like I said, right? I mean, if we do see those jobless claims running higher continuously, you know, NFP continuing to show sub 200K kind of headline prints, then that means that will kind of filter through to wage growth in the months to come. And that will take the pressure off inflation, even if rental inflation stays sticky. So I think that is, again, a driver, which the weakness of the jobs market, it can really drive disinflation expectations, which is, again, a big relief to the Fed. I think this week, yes, the CPI, I think the one to watch really will be the core CPI print, I would say, which has been stuck at 0.4% month on month in each of the last 3 months. So now we get the April print this week. And if that just cools down to 0.3% as well, I think that's quite a big relief, like I said, to the Fed, particularly because, you know, we've heard from them lately and they kind of have a very, very sticky dovish bent in their commentaries right now. They are looking for reasons to cut rate, it appears. So I think the market will obviously be watching the CPI number to see if that can give reasons to the Fed to cut rates. So, I mean, I was, you know, like I was saying on our internal call as well, Soren, earlier, the risk reward for this CPI print is very, very asymmetric from here. If you do see a stickier print, you know, maybe a 0.4% once again, which is higher than expected, that does take a little bit of a toll on Fed's credibility. That hasn't, you know, given much importance to that inflation overshoot for now. But from a market perspective, there is not much to do if you get a sticky print. You know, markets are already just anticipating one full Fed rate cut this year, maybe 1.5. So there's not a lot of scope to push that out also, given that we still have 7 months left in the year, and the weakness in the labor data that we just discussed. That also means that even if the inflation is a little bit sticky still, there could be expectations that wage growth will come off and it will take the pressure off inflation. So a higher than expected inflation print, I would say the market reaction, knee jerk, yes, we could certainly get something, but a sustained market reaction is unlikely because the market's just already priced in all that hawkishness. So the risk is really skewed towards a softer print because that is where we do have a lot of scope of, you know, pre-pricing the Fed path for this year.
So is it too simplistic to say that it's sort of lining up for more of a like a positive market reaction if it's softer, but probably a lesser negative reaction if it's more sticky than we expect, or what's the general expectation?
Yes, if you say that in the equity market sense, yes. I guess that's the right way to put it. But the reverse is true for the US dollar, so there would be limited upside, but more risks to the downside.
That was a good clarification, Charu. Let's leave the US for now and move to China, because it's been interesting over there that it has been a market that's performed relatively well, although we realize that there are quite a few obstacles and challenges, both on, like you can say, internal economic side, but also in terms of trade war talks. What's your take on China these days and how it's performing?
Yeah, it's interesting, Soren. A lot of my discussions with clients these days are back to be about China. That has not been in the picture over the last 2 years. So this is an interesting change of narrative that we've had in markets lately, you know, of course, and it's warranted because we've seen CSI 300 up about 20% from its February lows. The Hong Kong stocks, even more, I think, up about 30%. And of course, they're outperforming major global indices as well. So certainly something to keep an eye on. Now, just to understand what is driving this, there's obviously been that valuation discount. China markets have been so cheap. Despite this recent run higher, they're still very, very cheap compared to their US counterparts. So that's obviously driving some interest. But other than that, there has been, I would say, some ramp up in the support measures that are coming through from Chinese authorities. Like, for example, there was a Politburo meeting at the end of April, and we've finally seen an announcement come through on the convening of the third plenary session in July. That has been postponed quite a bit. So it seems like there's some consensus that is forming in the Chinese leadership on what strategic direction they want to take and what would be the measures taken to really implement that over the next 5 years. So that's a positive sign. But otherwise, we are seeing some announcements here and there about, you know, some of the cities kind of removing property curbs, you know, curbs on purchases of residential property, particularly. There's been announcements around, you know, tax cuts on Hong Kong stock dividends for Chinese citizens. So there's been these, you know, some announcements here and there, which have continued to fuel that rally in Hong Kong and Chinese stocks. Now, the question really is that, are these measures enough to kind of respond to the structural challenges that China has been facing? The challenge of, you know, high levels of debt, the challenge of demographics, you know, the challenge of the property sector that has obviously weighed on the consumer sentiment as well and consumer spending as well. I don't see those structural efforts yet. So I do still think that this is a very, very tactical rally, not to say that it cannot continue. I think, the like I said, the valuation discount is still good enough. There's a lot of focus there, and that can continue to drive this tactical rally to extend further. You know, there's a lot of short-term momentum in that market, but I'm still quite doubtful about any structural strength here. In fact, over the weekend, we did see some more macro data coming out of China. There was the credit data, basically, what are the new loans that have been issued, what kind of aggregate financing is in the economy, and it was a disappointing set of numbers. So, you know, again, that has fueled expectations that China will be ramping up support for its economy by the fiscal measures or monetary policy support. So they do need more of that. But I still don't see any reforms being in place to kind of address those structural challenges. So we enjoy the run as long as it lasts. But obviously, I think we need to be a little bit careful. Yeah,
that's a very good call. So short-term opportunities, but be wary of the longer term future until we see some of these long term solutions. In recent months, China has been very much benchmarked towards Japan. There's also all of this devaluation talk, and there's obviously the currencies, and there's just the plain placement and all that. What's your take on the Japanese yen, which has been seeming to me the most interesting currency to watch, at least for the past few months?
Yeah, no, actually, that certainly remains one of Saxo's top traded instrument as well. So a lot of focus, yes, on yen. But before I move there, Soren, yes, I think you made a very good point about this rotation away from Japan, you know, in the expectation that the Japanese yen could strengthen here. That is that is happening a little bit. And that is also, again, fueling that recovery that we're seeing in the China markets. There have also been concerns about India markets being overvalued and expectations out of India elections that are ongoing right now being a little bit stressed. So there's been a correction happening in the India markets as well. And all that is also supporting that tactical rally that we are seeing in China. But again, I wanted to add another word of caution there about the risks coming through from that narrative on trade wars picking up again. There's actually an announcement due from the Biden administration on Tuesday, where they are expected to ramp up tariffs on China's electric vehicles, on even, I think, semiconductors and solar companies, quite a few strategic sectors on the radar here. So that is certainly, again, something to watch this week, and whether that could really disrupt that rally that we're seeing in Chinese stocks. But yes, coming back to your question on Japanese yen, I think again there as well, it's an interesting change of narrative that we are seeing. We are again back higher in dollar yen, closer to that 156 level. So what that means is we've erased quite a bit of those intervention-driven gains that we saw in the Japanese yen 2 weeks back. But there is not a lot of comments coming through from Japanese authorities lately on these FX moves. The narrative has actually shifted towards kind of creating a case for another rate hike from the Bank of Japan. I think that's quite interesting. In fact, today, the Bank of Japan, they were announcing their bond buying operations, and they actually reduced the size of bonds that they buy, compared to last month. So I think that is also an interesting development. It shows that they want to make the Japanese government bond yields move higher and to support the Japanese yen as well. So I think the mode of response to that weakness in the Japanese yen is looking like it's changing here, and certainly keeping on the radar the potential for another rate hike, maybe as early as June or at least July, really, from here.
And so interesting to have these rate hike discussions in Japan, because it's just something we haven't seen for a while. I know there's at least two other FX or currencies that you're looking at. And one is the Australian dollar. You said earlier in our internal call that there's a budget announcement that could turn out to be pretty interesting in Australia. What's your take there?
Yeah, so tomorrow, again, Tuesday, I should say, is the federal budget announcement from Australia. And interesting thing is that they've come out, the Australia's Treasury has come out with its inflation expectations. And they think that inflation could be back in the RBA target band, which is 2-3% by the end of this year. So by the end of 2024. Now, that is quite dovish compared to RBA's own outlook of CPI. They had expected the CPI to remain at around 3.8% at the end of this year, before really falling into the target band in 2025. So I think if those kind of expectations are coming through, in their numbers, then what we can expect them to announce tomorrow is going to be really interesting, whether they can really change the market's narrative around RBA's rate cut expectations. So far, the market is not expecting any rate cuts from the RBA this year. If inflation is expected to be back in that 2-3% band this year, does that mean that the markets may have reasons to, bring forward those rate cut expectations? We need to watch what they announce on, spending measures, because there have been obviously some talks about cost of living pressures and how the budget could support that. But from the inflation projections, it seems that that spending would be rather constrained as well. So I think certainly that's on the radar for Aussie dollar. along with, you know, what I mentioned about the China macro data slowing and more support measures being announced in China and the risk of tariffs there as well. All of that drives, again, Aussie dollar volatility potentially this week, as much as, you know, also the US CPI, which will remain the key catalyst for the world of FX.
And will that be the same for the British pound? Because I know that's also something you're watching this week.
The British pound, yes. I mean, last week was obviously quite a volatile week because the Bank of England did sound dovish a little bit. They hinted at an expectation around rate cut in June, even though we had a robust GDP after that. So the market pricing hasn't shifted significantly for that June meeting. And we do get the jobs data out this week in the UK. That's on Tuesday again. I think that's, again, a pretty important thing to watch. If we do get those wage growth numbers slowing from here, there is again reasons to believe that the market expectation for a June rate cut could pick up. But I'm not going to be, you know, bearish going into this week on sterling, because again, I think, like I said, right, the US inflation remains a bigger driver at this point. And if we do see any slowdown there, any dollar weakness, like we said, you know, sterling remains, in the last few weeks, we've seen sterling is one of those high beta currencies. It responds quite a bit to dollar moves. So a weaker dollar could still mean that sterling remains supported, or rather even goes up this week.
Okay, so in all of this, Chara, I think we're more or less ended here, but I'm just curious, what are you paying the most attention to, like in terms of what's the most interesting currency out there to watch this week?
Certainly, I think the dollar trend, for me, I have been waiting for that turning point in the dollar. It still seems we are a little bit far from that. Like I said, a softer US CPI could bring some downside, but let's not forget, we still have, you know, these geopolitics and tariff wars and all of that can again still support the dollar. So I still don't see a clear signal of getting onto a dollar bear train at this point, as much as I don't see much upside for the dollar from here. So I think very hard to be, sticking to one direction in one particular currency. But if anything, I think for me this week, key would be how much of a weakness we could see in the Chinese yuan, given the risks that I mentioned, right? Ramped up, policy support, particularly from, you know, a risk of a monetary policy, of a rate cut, their tariff risks. I think all those are continuing to point towards more downside for Chinese yuan. But if I was to put on a trade, maybe I think, I think for my money, I would be looking at something beyond FX, like gold and silver potentially, which is an easy play on dollar weakness, on yield weakness, if at all that softer CPI came through. And it's also a good safe haven play if we were to consider these tariff risks coming from US and China wars.
All right. So there you have it. Quite a few interesting announcements on Tuesday before the very important CPI announcement on Wednesday. Pay attention to some of the FX stuff and obviously have a close eye on that figure coming out of the US on Wednesday. But Charo, we won't be doing a podcast next week because you'll be off. You have a big birthday to celebrate. Apart from that, thank you so much for coming and making us all a little bit smarter today.
Thank you, Soren. Thank you for having me. And yes, let's speak again in 2 weeks.
Definitely. And to all of you out there, thank you so much for listening. We will be back anytime soon. But until then, happy trading.